Jusqu'ici, tout va bien. Jusqu'ici, tout va bien. Jusqu'ici, tout va bien. Mais l'important,
Parfait.
ce n'est pas la chute, c'est l'atterrissage. Welcome to episode number 12 of Tahir Podcast. My guest today is Charlotte Stranger. She's a French citizen and she's a teacher. And she joins us today from Damascus. Welcome, Charlotte.
Thank you so much. Hi.
So let's start by talking about your childhood, your upbringing, your academic background. Let's get into that.
Yeah. So I studied at the university in France. I did a bachelor of English and German, and then I did a master in French linguistics. And I started going to Egypt actually in 2014, so right after the revolution. And I followed up like the Arab Springs from a distance, you know, when I was in France, and I was just following the headlines and everything. But when I arrived in Cairo in 2014, it really like everything struck me, and I met many people from the square, and I got to learn much more about the Arab Spring when I was there. And that was actually the start of my passion for the Middle East. And so I was supposed to stay like for a month in Cairo, and I ended up staying 6 months that time, because I really fell in love with the city and mostly the people actually. And it was a very sad but interesting time. So I stayed, and then I came back to Cairo for a while, and I moved back to Cairo in 2018 until 2020, until COVID, and then I moved to Damascus at the beginning of mid 2020 for a position as a French teacher here in Damascus.
Yeah, and what did you study at university?
English and German as a bachelor, and then French linguistics as a master.
Yeah, but you teach French, right? French and German.
Yeah, I teach French. No, I teach only French now in French schools mostly. So it's like French literature, some grammar, etc.
Yeah. So you taught in Cairo, right? Before Damascus.
Yeah, I was teaching in Cairo.
So how was that experience?
That was amazing, actually. I was in the Mère de Dieu in Garden City with the nuns. So that was a very unique experience, because it's a different world, you know, it's a different universe. So it was really interesting, and I really loved it. So that's why I stayed for 2 years. And it's a very interesting point of view about the Egyptian society, to be working with the nuns and having like Christian and Muslim students all together in this crazy place that is the school of the Mère de Dieu in the heart of Cairo. I didn't want to go to the French school in Maadi. I didn't want to go to schools in Tagamo and everything. I really wanted to be close to downtown. So that's why I chose that school. And yeah, that was an amazing experience, honestly.
Yeah. And what about 2011? Like during the Arab Spring, you were in France, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so are you following up with the news? You know, how was that like for you?
Yeah, it was, I guess, like for me, I was very supportive about the Arab Spring. I really wanted things to change, but I was also very young and like looking at this from afar, you know, from a distance. Like it's really different when you're in France or in Europe, and you see some videos, you see the headlines, you see all that. But it's really complicated to understand what's truly happening in the countries. Like you don't really know. And I wasn't that smart at the time to try to have more information, like accurate information. So I was just following and like being supportive. But I, like for example, with the Egyptian revolution, I only knew like the big headlines, you know, like the big phases, but I didn't know in details what was really going on. And it's really when I came to Cairo and when I lived in Cairo and met so many people there that I got to know much more information about it.
Yeah. And what about your recent move to Syria, to Damascus? You know, how is that
Yeah.
process like? Like, when did you decide you want to go there?
It was not planned as Cairo, the same thing. Like, I just came back to France because of COVID, and I was supposed to finish my school year in Egypt, and then I wanted to travel for a while. But then with COVID and everything, when we started to understand that it wasn't going to be possible to travel anymore for a while, I felt like, okay, I will have to work some more and find a new position. And when I started looking for a job, after like 1 week, I think, there was a position that opened at the French School of Damascus. Before that, I had never really been interested about going to Syria, of course, because of the everything that was going on. So the same thing, I was following up like what was going on in Syria, but I never thought I would move there. But when the position opened, I don't know, my heart skipped a bit, and I was like, okay, that's maybe, that might be like a great opportunity to again see what's going on over there. Because I really started, when I moved to Cairo, I really started to be passionate about the area, the history, the language, the food. And I wanted to know more. I also, like, I traveled for a while. I stayed for a few months in Palestine and everything. So there is a big connection between, in history, between Egypt, Palestine, and Syria. So when I saw the position in Syria, I was like, okay, maybe I should go. And I also, at that time, I was thinking about switching careers, and I wanted to become a humanitarian. So that was also like a logical step, you know. So I applied and I got in. So I moved to Syria.
Yeah. So let's get back a little bit. You said you've been to Palestine, right? When did you go?
That was 2017.
Yeah, and you were volunteering there, or was it tourism?
I went there and I had no plan at the beginning. I just traveled for 6 months in the Middle East, like from Egypt. I went to Sinai, then took the ferry up to Jordan, and then traveled in Jordan, and then entered Palestine from Jordan. And I wanted to go to Palestine again to see what was really going on over there, because you see news about Palestine and you know what's going on, but it's something really different to experience it on the field, you know, and really see what's going on and really be face to face with the reality. So I really wanted to go there and see what was really going on. And when I was there, yeah, I started volunteering. Like, I took contact with some associations over there, and I ended up volunteering with different Palestinian associations for 3 months.
And I've been to Tunisia.
You have been?
No, I'm asking you, have you been to Tunisia?
No, not yet.
Yeah. But you should go, you'll like it there.
Yeah, I really want to go.
Yeah.
But I think it's a bit quiet for me.
It's what?
A bit quiet for me.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've been to like Palestine, Damascus.
Yeah. Cairo.
Huge, yeah.
Yeah.
And how's your
first
day? But
yeah, it's on my list.
Yeah. And how's your first day like arriving in Damascus? You know, walk me through.
Arriving in Damascus was already an adventure, you know, because you have to enter Syria, which is not easy, because from Europe, of course, we cannot take a plane directly to Damascus. And also it was COVID. It was September 2020. So completely at the time of COVID. So I took a flight from the south of France, where I live, to Beirut. And then in Beirut, we had to stay like 2 days in lockdown. There was another teacher that was also coming from France. So we met on the plane. We had to stay for 2 days in the hotel. And then you take a taxi from Beirut to Damascus. So it takes like 2 hours, and it's supposed to take like 2 hours and 30 minutes. Can take more, depends on how many people you have at the borders, if they are nice to you, if all of your papers are okay. That day there were many people, so I think it took us like 4 hours actually in total. So you arrive at the border to leave Lebanon. you have some papers to do, and then you have a small like no man's land for a few minutes, and you arrive at the border to enter Syria. Again, like a few papers, blah, 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 and then you enter. Yeah. And then we arrived at the hotel in Damascus.
Yeah, but you don't get your visa prior, right? Like you didn't go to the Syrian embassy in France.
No. There is a Syrian embassy in France, but it's not working like that because we have no, France and Syria have no diplomatic relationships. So you cannot apply like that for a visa to Syria. So for me, it's a work visa. That's why I can enter Syria. But otherwise, it's really hard still at the moment to get like touristic visa for Syria. So they did everything. The school in Syria did everything, all of the papers. They sent me some documents that I showed at the border, paid the visa on place, and then entered.
And did you leave the country ever since? And how was that like? It was also, did you struggle like leaving and getting in, or was it a breeze?
No, it's just like now I have the residency for Syria, so it's okay. Like I never have any questions. I just have to show my residency, and it's okay. Like I can leave. It's just that it's a bit of a struggle that you have to take a car. You have to go through so much process with the documents and everything. If there are many people, it takes a long time. And because of COVID as well, like you also need to do the PCR, blah, blah, blah. So it's just like a lot of things to do and a lot of hassle to enter or to leave. But there is no problem. Like I have never had any problem, any questions, anything, to enter or to go out. And even when I came back to France, for example, like I didn't know how in France also they would welcome me with my passport, with like many Syrian visas, but I never had any questions for now.
Yeah.
We'll see. Yeah.
What about foreigners? Are there many foreigners in did you meet any foreigners in Damascus so far?
Yeah, there are some foreigners, but most of them, like the big majority, are NGOs workers. Yeah. We at the French school, for example, we're only like a few teachers. Most of them, they've been living here for a while. They are like married to Syrians, so they stayed even during the war and everything. And for the newcomers, usually they don't stay. Because it can be a bit complicated living here.
And what about your students? How old are they?
They are 13, 14 years old.
And communicating with them, you know, they feel like is it like closed? Like, do they not know much about, you know, what's going on in the world? How do you
No, they know. Like, you know, in French schools around the world, you have somehow the elite of the country, you know, and they've been studying French since they were like 3 or 4 years old. So they speak really well French. So there is no problem in linguistic to speak French. And about the ideas, there are also like kids that a lot of them have been spending a few years abroad, like during the war, like 3, 4 years. Either in Lebanon or sometimes in Canada or France or Germany, most of them left at some point during the war. And now they start coming back for the last few years because the situation is more stable. But most of them, they left, or before that, they were also like traveling. It's families that usually have enough money to be traveling abroad. They go a lot to the Emirates, to wherever. So they know, like, they are, honestly, there are teenagers that I felt I could have in France, for example.
Yeah.
Somehow. They have a Syrian side as well, but they know how we think. They know how it is in France and in the US. And, you know, they have Netflix, like this kind of stuff. Like, they know how it's going on.
Yeah. So, Charlotte, how's daily life in Damascus? You know, how are sanctions affecting it and so forth?
Yeah, it's really complicated at the moment for the population because of the international sanctions. The economic situation is really hard. There is a big inflation for the last 3 years. The rate is getting like higher and higher. The prices, of course, are also higher and higher. There is a shortage of many things, mostly electricity, because of the benzene, like the gasoline that we need to produce energy. So we have electricity cuts like every day. It depends on the city, and it depends also on the neighborhoods. Like, for example, in my neighborhood, I have 2 hours of electricity. And then like 4 hours without. In some neighborhoods, it's like 1 hour of electricity and then 5 hours without electricity. And in some cities, it's even less. So it really depends. There is also a shortage of gas. So it's really complicated. So for example, for the heaters, you could think like, okay, if you don't have electricity, you can use the heaters that we have with mazout, but there is also a shortage of mazout. So it's not possible to find an alternative situation. Depending also on moments, we also have a lack of, for example, bread, or sometimes olive oil, or sometimes sugar. Last year, there was a lack of sugar, for example. So it's really complicated. And last year, there was a report that was submitted by the UN, and they estimated that by the end of 2021, up to 80% of the population would not be able to feed itself, you know, because they cannot afford to buy enough food for themselves. So the situation is, the daily situation of the Syrians, because of the sanctions mostly, it's really, really complicated.
Yeah. And how are people adapting with these sanctions?
Yeah, they have, most of the time, they have several jobs, because one job is not enough. To give you an idea, like the average salary at the moment, monthly, it's like 100,000 Syrian pounds. But a bottle of olive oil for 100,000. And a bottle of olive oil, for example, is between 10 to 15,000. So like, how can you live like this, you know? So usually they have several jobs. A lot of families also have people outside of the country that send some money. This is one way of surviving. Also, the humanitarian response, of course, is trying to help as much as possible, like the population. But people are struggling. Like a lot of people sold their houses, for example, to have money. Like it's really hard, or gold, or you know, like whatever they can sell. So they are really struggling.
And who are they blaming, if you can talk about that?
okay. Well, the international community, of course, that is imposing like the sanctions, are the ones who are sanctioning Syria. So for the Syrians, like they are very mad with this situation. But of course, because whatever they think about the situation here, they are the one to suffer the consequences. So it's really hard.
Yeah. And, you know, speaking of sanctions, during the first Gulf War, when Saddam invaded Kuwait, the international community, you know, and the U.S. used sanctions against him. And the only thing these imposed sanctions did was affect the people, not Saddam, exactly. not his men.
Exactly. So the same in Iran, the same in Cuba, the same, like it's affecting the population firsthand. Like they are the ones suffering. It's not helping the situation like at all. Yeah. Like people are really, really struggling at the moment. It's really, really hard. So it's not helping. It's really not a solution. It's not changing anything, except making people's life like impossible.
And how about humanitarian work? How is it? Do you think it's been effective in, you know, helping the Syrian population? And what kind of services do they offer? if you know.
Well, they are, you know, like providing water, providing food, like emergency response, education and emergency and everything. So I think in one hand, the humanitarian response is helping some people, of course, in Syria. But I don't think that the humanitarian field is perfect. And I think it's also impacting on the country and everything. And it cannot be a solution on the long term anyway. So we need to think about something else for sure. Mm. Yeah.
And how long did it take you to adjust to life in Damascus?
Not that long, honestly, because before that I had been like 3 years in Egypt. So, I think Egypt is harder than Syria somehow, honestly, especially Cairo, because it's huge. Damascus, it's very surprising to say that, but it's very quiet. It's very small. It's like 2 million inhabitants. You can do pretty much anything in 15, 20 minutes with the taxi. Mm. When, you can drive 1 hour in Cairo and you're still in Cairo. Yeah. So you can walk very easily in Damascus. So honestly, that was very easy for me to adjust the mentality. Of course, it's different than Egypt or Palestine or anywhere, but it's you have like this main thing, you have some things in common in the Arab world. So it wasn't like I came directly from my countryside or something. But the most difficult part is the daily lives, like the electricity thing, for example. It's really the thing that is so annoying. Like we have 2 hours of electricity every 4 to 5 hours. So 2 with electricity, 4 or 5 hours without. Every day, sometimes like this afternoon, for example, we were supposed to have 2 hours and it ended up being like half an hour, and then you don't have electricity for the rest of the day. So that's the hardest part, because then you have to organize your day around this, and you don't have electricity, you don't have internet, you don't have the fridge, you don't have the light, you don't have the heater or the AC, and it's cold in the winter and it's really hot in the summer. Mm. So, you need to charge your devices whenever you can. You need to, I don't have hot water when I don't have electricity. So I need to take my shower in those times, it's really hard. So that's the main thing that I had to adapt to. Mm.
And what about the fridge situation? How do you manage that?
Yeah. Well, I buy groceries every 2 days so that I don't waste anything.
Avoid ice cream.
Yeah, no ice cream. You go to the restaurants for ice cream, but no. Yeah, I never use the freezer, for example. No, I don't have enough electricity for that, of course.
Yeah.
So yeah, you adapt. At the same time, you have to. Everybody, not everybody, but most of the people, they are in the same situation. They don't have electricity, they don't have anything. And in my area, for example, it's not the worst. Some people, they have only a few hours during the day. And Damascus is not the worst in Syria, it's really different. For example, in Aleppo, the situation is very different. So you have to keep that in mind.
And in your nearly 2 years there, what was, one thing that really stood out, or a number of things that, you really seem to like or enjoy?
Food.
Yeah.
Especially food. After Egypt, I'm sorry, but I love Egypt so much, but the Egyptian food is not what I love about it. But Syrian food, I love it. It's really nice. No, but
you'll be stopped at the Cairo airport next time.
Yeah, I think I will not be allowed to enter anymore. Although I prefer Egyptian murkhiya.
Yeah, right. Wait, do they have Syrian murkhiya?
Yeah, they have Syrian murkhiya. They don't make it as a soup. They keep the leaves and they fry the leaves. It's more like spinach thing,
Yeah.
They don't make the soup out of it. It's still good, but not as good as the Egyptian one. Yeah. No, but to be serious, it's hard to describe my experience in Syria, because it's very mixed feelings. Like, it's a country that has been through war in the last 10 to 12 years. And life in Damascus seems pretty much normal if you don't look at the electricity, if you don't look at the fact that there is no gas as well, or it's really hard to find gas. Sometimes there is no bread or no oil or no, you know, that you have. Of course, you have many problems, but you can also, especially the foreigners, we can enjoy life normally. There are many nice areas, many cafes, many restaurants. So I cannot complain about that. But
there's
also
a good
when you
life in Damascus, right?
Yeah, there is a big nightlife, because there is the Christian area is really big. so it's also, you can go out as much as you want, for sure, every day of the week, actually. But when you leave that, of course, you can see the other side. And this is like the damaged part of the country, mostly because Damascus was pretty okay during the war, and what has been touched during the war has been renovated. So now it's pretty okay. When you're inside the city, you don't feel the war. But once you leave Damascus, it's completely different. So it really reminds you. Yeah. I try to travel as much as possible, like inside the country, to see the rest of the country, like to see what it's like in Aleppo, in Homs, in Hama, and on the coast. Because, you know, the capital, it's always very different than the rest of the country. So if you want to have like a larger picture of the country, you need to move around and go and meet other people. And so I'm trying to see as much as possible.
And did you find any difficulty, you know, traveling domestically?
No, actually no, because again, I have this residency. It's something that is really weird, but the NGOs, for example, they don't have the right to travel around. They need authorization from the ministry and everything. But for me as a teacher, I don't know why, but it's okay. Like, I can go, they don't care, they don't mind. So I can go anywhere. So that's really nice. And I never have really any problems. Like, it's okay, they just check the card, the residency, the passport, and they let me go. But of course, there are many military checkpoints, and you always have to stop. But that's it. And there are some places that we can go to as well, some areas. But I go to Aleppo a lot. I go to the coast. I go to the countryside of Damascus without any problems at the moment.
And what do you miss most about La République Française?
My family and my friends. I would like to see them more. But I am used to living abroad. I am okay with that. And there is nothing I really miss about France. Like, I love France. I'm really happy when I go to France and when I see everyone. When I eat cheese, of course. But I mean, there is nothing I really, really miss. I'm really happy here in this area, whether it's Egypt or Palestine or Syria. Like, there are some difficulties. There are some like hard moments, of course. But I really chose to be here, and I'm trying to do the best out of this experience.
And the French elections are coming up. Are you gonna go back to vote?
Oh my God.
Have you been following up with what's been going?
Yeah, I'm trying to follow, but it makes me very depressed to see what's going on. I don't know, honestly. We'll see. Like, I don't really believe in politics in France. It's the same puppet show as in many countries. So I don't know. We'll see what's going on. We'll see in the next few months what happens.
Yeah. And what are your plans going forward? Do you wanna continue living in Damascus and teaching in Damascus, or do you wanna, you know, travel more and experience more?
Well, I want to stay for a bit more in Damascus. Like, I'm thinking to do a third school year after this one. And I am actually thinking about studying again, like starting a master in political sciences and project management, like specialized in the Middle East. So I might do that next year, like as well as working at the school. I don't really know what I want to do. Like, I would love to go to live in another Arab country. But, you know, like, Egypt wasn't planned, Syria wasn't planned. I never know. So usually I see with the opportunities and what happens and, like, anything that comes up. And if I feel like doing it, I do it. I would really love, actually, to go to live for a while in Sudan. But I don't know. I've never seen position in Sudan, so we'll see.
I think it's quite tense right now, that, you know, the
yeah.
coup taking place.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. We'll see.
Yeah. So do you have any closing remarks or something you want to talk about before you?
I don't know. What would you like to know? What more?
Your Palestine trip, you know, tell me more about it, you know, going there, you know, interacting with Palestinians, you know, how was that like, you know, were you welcomed there, stuff like that?
Palestine was, I think, one of the most life-changing experience that I had. I went there, like, I didn't really know what to expect from this trip, and it changed my life. I knew that it was going to be hard, and I knew that I was going to see like hard situations and everything, but I think you can never truly imagine what you're going to see and what you're going to feel like. So I arrived there and I quickly started to meet like with people from associations. I did different things, different tasks. I arrived when it was the olive harvest. So I went with a family near Nablus to help them harvest their olive trees, because, you know, it's good for them to have, it's really sad what I'm going to say, but it's good for them to have white people with them, because then the soldiers are not going to hurt them, because we're here and we can take pictures. And if we're here, the international community would react, you know. But when it's only Palestinians, nobody really cares. So we go there as like defense somehow, and also to report like what's going on and see how it's like. The soldiers came in the morning, for example. They came back in the evening. This family, they had a 3-day authorization to harvest the olives. And then at the end of the first day, the military, they said, no, that's it. Actually, you will not be able to harvest more. You had one day and it's enough. We changed our minds. And that happens all the time, you know. They decide that they give up. So I did this kind of things. I was going to the weekly protest on Friday against the Israeli army. I was going to places to like take pictures of what was going on. When I was with a coordinator in the Jordan Valley, he was receiving calls and they were telling him like, okay, you have to go to that man, that farmer, the army is there, they are like molesting him, they are destroying whatever in his house or in his garden. So we would go there, we would take pictures, and then we would write reports. This kind of thing. I was helping the associations with the websites, the reports, the translations, this kind of things like communication and everything. Like many different tasks, whatever they needed, we would do it.
For how long?
3 months.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Right. Thank you so much, Charlotte, for
You're
your
welcome.
Time. It's been a
You're
great
welcome.
Conversation. Thank you. Thank you.
Same here. You're welcome.